Case number 19-2377, Anthony Daunt et al. V. Jocelyn Benson et al. And case number 19-2420, Michigan Republican Party v. Jocelyn Benson. Oral arguments to be as followed. 15 minutes to be shared by plaintiffs. 15 minutes to be shared by defendants. Mr. John J. Bursch for the appellants.
Good morning, Your Honors. John Bursch on behalf of the Daunt plaintiffs. I have 5 minutes, followed by Mr. Gordon for five, and I have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the Court.
Yes.
The rules for the Michigan Redistricting Commission exclude categories of individuals based on their exercise of constitutionally protected speech and association in violation of the First and Fourteenth Amendments. Because these unconstitutional conditions are non-severable, this Court should enjoin the Commission's operation. The starting point is the U.S. Supreme Court's rule that the government cannot deny a benefit to a person on a basis that infringes her constitutionally protected interests. Yet that is exactly what the Commission does here. It punishes applicants based not on their qualifications, but on their activities, employment, and even familial relationships. And it does so in arbitrary ways. If you are a Republican or Democratic nominee for the Michigan Supreme Court or the Democratic mayor of Detroit, you're eligible. But if your daughter is a secretary for a registered lobbyist or your spouse has opposing political views but holds a state party position, then you're out. That does not satisfy any level of scrutiny. I want to start with the applicable test. The one test we know that can't be applied here is the Anderson verdict test. Because under Anderson verdict, it only applies where the plaintiff is alleging that a law has burdened voting rights through the disparate treatment of voters. That's the lesson of this court's decision.
This is Judge Moore. Is there a case that says it only applies where the owner is actually in the case language?
I think the closest we get to that is probably in the May decision that we submitted in our 28J letter. I think you get close to that in Judge Cole's opinion in Montier, the 2014 unpublished opinion of this court, and you get pretty close to that in both of the Husted cases in 2012 and 2016. What all those cases make clear, Your Honor, is that election-related is not enough. You've got to show that there's burdens on or discrimination in voting rights, because in Anderson and Burdick themselves, they describe burdens on or discrimination in voting rights as the trigger for their test. In Anderson, that's 460 U.S. at pages 787 to 89, and in Burdick, it's 504 U.S. at 423 to 24. And that's why Anderson Burdick has never been applied to redistricting plans or commissions in any litigation of which we're aware. The deferential approach in the Citizens for Legislative Choice versus Miller isn't any better. That also implicated voting rights, the rights of voters to vote for specific candidates or classes of candidates. In fact, this court said in the opinion that it was the state's power to prescribe qualifications for its office holders, like mandatory retirement provisions for elderly judges in the Gregory versus Ashcroft case, that could possibly, you know, trigger that. But here, we've got eligibility criteria for non-elected commissioner applicants, not elected office holders. We're not talking about something like age or tenure. We're talking about First Amendment protected activity. And we're talking about proxy criteria. So the state isn't imposing, for example, a 75-year age limit, like something that the Gregory versus Ashcroft case would have addressed. But, you know, instead, if it excluded those who played bingo or had hip surgery or whose spouse was an AARP member, in each one of the instances, the eligibility criteria are both over-inclusive and under-inclusive, which is a point I'll return to shortly. So if it's not Anderson Burdick and it's not Miller deferential, then what is the test? Well, I think you've got a couple of choices, and they're all roughly the same. You could apply strict scrutiny based on the cases that we cite on pages 11 to 12 of our reply brief, and that the Michigan Republican Party cites at page 4 of its principal brief. I think you could impose exacting scrutiny. This is higher than the ordinary Pickering scrutiny because the government is imposing a blanket ban on protected activity, and so then the burden is heightened. That's the lesson of Janus as well as National Treasury Employees Union. I think you could follow the Rutan Vital Government Interest Test, which includes a narrow tailoring component. That's on page 30 of our principal brief. It involves political considerations in hiring, rehiring, transferring, and promoting public employees. or even under Anderson Burdick, where you've got a severe burden, then it triggers strict scrutiny, even in that framework. So under any of those tests, you'd have to have...
Counsel, this is Judge Radler. Can I ask you about two other lines of cases that have been cited? One of the lines of cases involving conflicts of interest, probably the Corrigan case. Justice Scalia's opinion there is perhaps informative. And then the other line of cases are the cases that put some limits on who can hold elected office. There are the term limit cases. And the Clements case, I think, is a Justice Rehnquist opinion that upheld state limits on who could serve in the legislature. Why do those cases not guide our review?
Yes, Judge Riedler. With respect to Corrigan and the Judge Radler, with respect to conflicts of interest, that's really not an interest that's being advanced here. It's being undermined by not disqualifying folks who would have actual conflicts, as in the Kerrigan case. Now, there, it specifically involves folks who would have a specific direct conflict of interest, just like a judge being recused or a lawyer having to step off of a case because they have a direct conflict. And if you're really interested in getting rid of those kinds of conflicts, then you could simply exclude those folks who have a specific interest in the way that the lines are being drawn that might benefit them. But by excluding nonpartisan officials like the Detroit mayor or partisan nominated judges, by excluding volunteer campaign workers, by excluding unregistered lobbyists, you know, all of those things undermine that purported interest. And you've got an over-specificity problem, too.
I'm sorry, it's difficult. I apologize. So in those cases, I think the opinion talks about the difference between sort of a public right, which it envisioned the vote of a legislator, as sort of a public right as opposed to an individual citizen's right. Doesn't service on the commission seem a lot more like the vote of a legislator in terms of creating state public policy as opposed to an individual's right to vote for a candidate of their choice?
I admit that there's a loose analogy there, and I think that, you've demonstrated again why Anderson Burdick doesn't apply. We wouldn't apply Anderson Burdick to qualifications for legislators, only things that burden voting rights through just disparate treatment of voters. But the reason this isn't analogous to Kerrigan is because, you know, there are no proven direct or indirect conflicts between those who are excluded, and it's not including exclusions for those folks who would have a direct conflict. I touched on that latter category, the nonpartisan elected officials who are actually nominated by a partisan party or the volunteers for the campaigns. But let's talk about the over-inclusive for a minute. If you've got
this is Judge Moore. I think you've gone way over your 5 minutes. If you want to use your rebuttal time, you're welcome to do that. But you've by my clock, you've gone about 8 minutes.
Okay, Judge Moore, if I could just answer this last question here, and then I'll stop.
Well, you have been answering it for quite a while. I will give you a couple of sentences if you wish to conclude, or you can use your rebuttal time, whichever you prefer.
Yeah, I prefer not to use rebuttal time. Just a couple of sentences. On the over-inclusive side, Judge Radler, when you've got the employees of lobbyists who may not have any partisan affiliation, registered lobbyists who work for both parties, paid campaign workers who could be taking the job because of the money, or family members, you know, husbands and wives, a la James Carville and Mary Madeline, you know, in all of those instances, there is no conflict, and yet the statute or the constitutional provision treats the situation as though there were. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gordon?
Thank you, Your Honor. Yeah, this is Gary Gordon. I represent the member case plaintiffs. They include, in addition to individuals, the Michigan Republican Party. I would like to echo Mr. Bush's position regarding the district court's application of Anderson Burdick rather than a more exacting scrutiny. His arguments regarding the individual plaintiffs are also mostly parallel to the arguments that we would present. So I'll limit my comments to the arguments by the Michigan Republican Party. The goal of the amendment by the Secretary of State seems to be to squeeze any conflict of interest or political interest from the process. But the amendment deprives both the individuals and the party of the ability to engage in protected speech and freedom of association. assuming this, you know, the state has an interest in this, there are more, it requires a more narrowly tailored result. The amendment doesn't do so. The overreaching retroactive prohibition on anyone who engages in partisan activity for a reach back of 6 years and their relatives, whether or not the relatives engaged in any political activity, is a denial of the First Amendment rights. Specifically, for the Republican Party, this amendment removes its involvement in selecting its standard bearers in what is undeniably a political process. The attestation is that it is not a political process by the Secretary of State, but that ignores the actual language of the amendment, which sets forth various criteria that the commissioners shall abide by when drawing the new districts. Many of them are subjective and undefined and open to interpretation. They include that the districts must reflect the state's diverse population and community of interest, where community of interest may include, but shall not be limited to, populations that share cultural or historical characteristics or economic interests. None of that's defined. There's no question that Democrats or Republicans or the individuals who don't affiliate with either major party will likely possess vastly different opinions, not only as to what constitutes a community of interest or cultural characteristic or economic interest, but which of these ought to be considered when deciding to draw the political boundaries.
Judge Moore, your concern then is with respect to how the districts themselves will be drawn by this commission, is that right?
In part, but my concern is that the people who identify by as partisans through their own self-identification and who will exercise authority on behalf of Republicans are selected for the commission without any role whatsoever by the Republican Party. So their self-designation of affiliates may or may not be accurate. It may be that they were a Republican affiliate the day they applied, but not the day before. And there's no way to determine, and the Republican Party is absolutely denied any role in selecting these individuals. In fact, the Democratic Party has a role whereby they may strike persons that are in the pool, even though they happen to be Republicans.
Same. This is Ron Yeoman. You have the same right that they do, don't you?
That's correct, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. But we don't have the right, obviously, to select the Democratic members for the commission. And, they can raise that issue if they so desire. But the act itself requires them to maintain their partisan affiliation all the way through the end of the process. And that there's clearly partisan considerations to be decided in drawing these districts. So that when it comes, this is not a matter of precision or computerized drawing. It's a point where people have to exercise their judgment in interpreting these new standards that don't have any guidance whatsoever. And presumably people who are on this commission, who are identified as Democrats or Republicans, can tip a district in favor of one party or another by their own interpretation of these non-defined standards. So this is clearly a political process. It clearly impacts the party. And the party, and these people are clearly standard bearers for the party.
Mr. Gordon, this is Judge Radler. Can I ask you about that? Why is it that they are standard bearers? In other words, I would understand if they were a candidate for office and the party traditionally nominates its own candidates and the Supreme Court spoken to that, but here the language just says you have to register as a Republican, and I take it when you register as a Republican or a Democrat, you're not registering as a member of that party. I mean, that party has some formal aspects to it, but isn't this kind of a broader concern, just sort of which side of the spectrum you want to register, but not officially registering as a member of the party in the same way as a candidate for office from the party would be?
Well, you know, that in and of itself is a problem, Judge Radler. We don't have party registration in Michigan. And so there's no track record of these people. And because of the prohibitions on the First Amendment rights of association that are contained in the qualifying criterion, we don't know what their background is. It's a self-designated issue. Anybody can state that I self-designate myself as a Republican, and I have not engaged in any of the protected activity for the last 6 years, nor has have any of my relatives done so. And therefore, I'm qualified to be on the commission and to exercise judgment in drawing these districts where there's no specific criterion applied. Clearly, that opens the door for partisan interpretation of these criteria. And someone who engages in that process and determines what district an individual is created in applying these procedures is carrying the flag for their respective party. It indicates that they have to be affiliated with the party. Affiliated is not well defined. So we don't
I see that your time is up as well. So
I just want to ask Mr. Gordon, so I'd ask Mr. Burton, I think he ran out of time. I'd asked him about two lines of cases. One line of cases are these cases that uphold limits on elected office. For example, term limits. And then there's this Texas case where they put a limit on who could actually run for the state legislature. You couldn't be holding another office, a federal office, or a different state office. Why aren't those cases sort of instructive here in terms of the limitations of membership of this commission?
Well, the term limits don't impact the initial qualification to hold office, and it's an elective office, which is different than this appointive office where the Republicans or the Democrats would have a direct interest. The other cases, Judge Wheeler, other than term limits, the qualifications for elective office it's elective office. It's not an appointee position like this is. So I don't think those cases, which are analyzed usually under Anderson Burdick, really have a direct application to this case, where these are people who are appointed and who can self-designate without any input from anybody else what party they supposedly affiliate with without any input or consideration by the Republican Party. I will step back. I see my time has expired. Thank you.
Thank you
for accommodating us in this process today.
Sure. Thank you. I think now it is time for Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Your Honor. This is Paul Smith, representing Voters Not Politicians, the group that was the proponent of the ballot initiative at issue here. I want to start, if I may, with this question of the qualifications to be considered to be a commissioner and whether it creates any serious First Amendment problem and what the test that applies ought to be. Our view is that the district court actually applied too strenuous a test, and that the way the unconstitutional conditions doctrine applies to these kinds of political litmus tests for public employment is that the jobs fall into two categories. Those for which political litmus test is appropriate, and those for the vast majority of jobs, the sort of lying civil service jobs, for which patronage appointment of that kind is inappropriate and categorically forbidden under the long list of patronage cases that the Supreme Court has decided. And the term that distinguishes between the two categories is the policymaker. And in the usual case, it's a senior executive official working maybe closely with the elected governor, and the cases say, it's appropriate for that, or there to be a political litmus test for that job. We don't want to tell the governor he has to include people in his cabinet who have from a different party and a different political point of view, that wouldn't get the people's work done. And in this case, we have a somewhat different body. It's a commission designed to be politically neutral. The exclusions at issue here are an effort modeled on the California Commission to keep people from who have recently been involved in the professional political class out of this, to make this a citizens' commission, not a professional commission. Just as this court said in the term limits case, Citizens for Legislative Choice, the citizens of Michigan had opted for a citizens' legislature, not a professional legislature. And when the citizens of Michigan did that, saying we don't want people on the commission who will have the most difficulty putting aside their personal and professional and partisan interests, the voters had every right to do that, and it doesn't raise any serious constitutional issue. We don't even think a balancing test applies. Now, the state and Judge Neff said the Anderson verdict kind of balancing test should apply, and we're okay with that. I think it's the balancing test is easily satisfied here when there are very clear state interests and only the most modest of personal interests. Mr. Bursch keeps trying to discuss this as if this is a direct censorship of speech. I believe he said what we have here is, quote, a blanket ban on protected activity. But we have no such thing. We have a condition on eligibility for 13 specific, highly specialized jobs. And in that context, the state has very strong interest in designing qualifications that will help the commission operate in the way it's intended to. If I could, then, I'd like to turn to the Republican Party's claim that somehow or other it has a right to choose or veto people on the commission because the system is set up to have four self-identified Republicans, four self-identified Democrats, and five unaffiliated members among all the citizens here.
Mr. Smith, this is Judge Radler. I apologize to cut you off.
Oh, no.
A little bit about some of the line drawing here. I mean, Mr. Bursch mentioned some examples. There are some sort of curious lines that we're drawing. For example, a full-time campaign volunteer could serve as a commissioner, but a very part-time employee of a candidate or elected official could not serve. Is that right?
Well, I believe that is right, Your Honor. I would say two things about that. First, I don't think under the appropriate level of scrutiny that you need to, that it's appropriate to kind of nitpick exactly how they did these lines. There's always going to be things that are on the margin that you could do slightly differently. The other thing is that the interest that's
what's the justification for a city official being able to serve, but a township official or a state official not being allowed to serve?
Again, Your Honor, I think they did their best to try to identify people who have the kinds of involvement in partisan activity that would make them make it more difficult for them to put aside their personal and professional.
What about like a union official or a high-ranking member of a pro-choice organization? So long as they're not registered lobbyists, they could also serve, right? They would have pretty significant interest in how lines are drawn.
But they would have interest from an ideological point of view, perhaps, Your Honor. But what we're talking about here is keeping professional politicians and lobbyists off the commission, not people who have strong points of view. There can be strong points of view, but the commission deals with that by having balance and then having a voting process that requires that there be bipartisan support for the map. It's not to try to keep people off the commission who have points of view. It is to keep people off the commission who have direct personal interests. Which is why a staff member might be excluded even if a volunteer isn't. It's a different kind of relationship between the political system and the individual. It seems to us, well, you know, you could make slight changes here and there in how the lines are drawn. It could be slightly broader group of people. It could be slightly narrower. In the end, this is something that the state of Michigan gets great deference on. Under the Citizens for Legislative Choice case, under the cases cited there, this is a kind of core function of the state to set qualifications for its senior officials, particularly in ones doing this very difficult job of balancing political considerations. And we don't think that the federal courts ought to be going in and saying, well, maybe you should have left this person in and not that person, et cetera. On this issue of...
The state interest, I think, is pretty significant here. For example, if a state wants to require a voting ID for elections, pretty clearly the state would have a strong interest there in how, whether it's drawing lines or running elections, I think, which you would probably agree the state would have a strong interest in either instance.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. The question is the state interest in requiring voter IDs the same as the state interest here in setting qualifications for the commissioners? Those, you know, seem like quite different things. One has to do with putting a burden on individual voting by citizens. Another has to do with the qualifications of people who voluntarily to serve in a very high policy-making role, paid job. There may be strong state interest in voting.
Another way to look at the difference is one is a total prohibition on service. One is a total prohibition on participation. The other one is a potential burden, but not a prohibition on participation.
Well, it is a burden if you have done certain kinds of activity in the previous 6 years. It is not a lifetime prohibition, and it is directly connected to making the commission operate in the way that it was designed to operate. And so we think that the right standard is the one from Branty, which we quote on page 28 of our brief, is the political litmus test an appropriate requirement for the effective performance of the public office involved? And here, given the nature of the kinds of citizen commission that was intended, we think it's an appropriate qualification. Your Honor, I may be running out of time. If I could just have a couple of seconds on the Writer Association and the Michigan Republican Party. The notion that these commissioners are standard bearers for the party seems to us totally inappropriate. They're not elected. They're not running for anything. There are no party nominations. What this is a commission designed to have political balance, just like the Securities Exchange Commission, the Federal Election Commission. All of those commissions try to make sure that there's political balance in order that one party not dominate. And here it's, of course, most important because we're trying to achieve fair maps, not gerrymanders. And in all of those cases involving bipartisan commissions, the people are identified by virtue of self-identification. They don't go to the Republican Party and say, who would you like to nominate to be on the Securities Exchange Commission? Or who do you certify as a real Republican? That's just not the way the system works, nor should it. And so we think that they don't have any interest at all as a party in playing a role in this process, and that to give them such a role would be to completely misunderstand what was going on here. If I might, Your Honor, I guess it looks like my time is up. I don't want to go over that. Thank you.
Thank you. Unless there are any questions, we'll move on to Ms. Mindgas.
Good afternoon. This is Attorney General Heather Mindgas on behalf of Appalachian Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson. I appreciate Mr. Smith stepping into the breach here and taking lead on this argument given the current circumstances with the Department of Attorney General. But I agree and I second everything that Mr. Smith has so ably argued. But from the state's perspective, I think it's important, you know, a couple big picture points. I mean, the Supreme Court has told us twice now that it is up to the states to tackle and resolve this longstanding problem of excessive partisanship in redistricting. And this has to be especially true now that it's a non-justiciable issue at the federal level. So the takeaway has to be that the courts are trusting the state to exercise its significant sovereign interest, its power, to craft a remedy. And that the chosen remedy that the state picks must be accorded significant deference by the federal court. I mean, these are the similar principles articulated by this court in the Citizens for Legislative Choice versus Miller case. And I think a second big takeaway point here is it's important to recall that this is Michigan's second attempt at fixing this process and creating a functional redistricting commission. I mean, what did the people learn before? Allowing the parties to handpick their members didn't work. Creating an even-numbered commission of only party members didn't work. A limited disqualification provision for only current officers and employees of the government didn't work. So many of the procedures that the plaintiffs are now challenging represent the state's fixes to past failures. And I think this is important in keeping in mind that we come here with proof of past processes that didn't work. And this is why we have implemented these new, stronger, provisions in the new redistricting commission.
What is your response to the categories of exclusion being either over-inclusive or under-inclusive?
Well, I think that would need the test, Your Honor, because as we argued in our brief, we believe the Anderson-Burdick balancing test applies to these qualifications, because in essence, redistricting is an element of election regulation, and the commission performs an element of election work, and so we would balance it under Anderson-Burdick. And the burden here on any state's interest is very small, and the state's interest is very big. It's not compelling. And so you don't get to the kind of strict scrutiny, narrow tailoring review under Anderson-Burdick. But I would also say, if Anderson-Burdick isn't the right test, I agree with Mr. Smith that there is the deferential approach discussed in Citizens' case, would be the next best. And after that, both briefs, there's been plenty of briefing between our office and BNP, that, the restrictions satisfy any scrutiny that would be applied.
This is Judge Radler, when you say this is not a burden, one way to look at this is this is the entire prohibition on serving. So that's probably the ultimate burden, the prohibition. Are you saying it's not a burden because they're not being punished for speech, but they're being punished for just prior service, or are you saying something else?
Right, it's not a speech or associational burden, as they've alleged here, because they're not being punished for being Republicans, and they certainly can engage in any amount of Republican speech and association that they want. The reason they're not eligible for the commission is because of the experience and the relationships and the conflicts of interest that their work or activities create now. And so it really, to me, it's not, from my perspective, it isn't much different than, to be governor in Michigan, you have to be 35 and live in the state for 4 years. If I'm 31, but I want to be the Republican candidate, and I see Jocelyn Benson, my argument is, well, you're violating my First Amendment and 14th Amendment rights to speak and associate as a Republican. And we would all say, no, that's not really true, because the prohibition is based on residency and age. And here, they're ineligible, not because of their speech or their identification as Republicans, but the potential for conflict of interest that their relationships and jobs have created. If that answers your question.
And we're coming up to the end of your time. I think you have a minute or so left if you want to conclude.
I would like to make maybe one third point. I think I can't remember who maybe mentioned this, perhaps Mr. Gordon, but it's important to recall that the mission of the commission is to draw and adopt fair and unbiased maps. I mean, if the plaintiffs think that any part of the commission's process, whether it's some of these challenge principles today or not, if they believe the process has resulted in flawed maps, they can seek review in the Michigan Supreme Court. That's expressly provided for in the Constitution. So if there's somehow this results in flawed map making, there is a remedy for that, and it's in the Michigan Supreme Court.
This is Judge Razor. Can I ask you one other question? What's the justification in terms of the line drawing here? I asked your colleague, your co-counsel. My understanding is that legislators can't serve, but that some members of the legislature can strike members from the commission. How do you reconcile the idea of keeping legislators out versus giving them a veto over who serves?
I'm sorry, I couldn't understand the last part of the vote. I understand the legislature, but what was the second category person?
Maybe I read it incorrectly, but my understanding is that leaders of the House and Senate can each veto people who serve on the commission. So it's odd to me to say you can't serve on the commission, but yet these members of the legislature can have such a high-profile role in striking members.
Well, I think those serve two different functions, the ineligibility provision and the ability to strike people from the group of 200 that ultimately make their way before the legislature. The strikes are a nod, essentially, to the MRPs and plaintiffs' concerns today that they're not able to pick their own standard bearer to be on this commission. So if there are concerns that there are fakers or people who are being untruthful, then the strikes allow them that remedy to go to pick and choose on any of the categories if they wish who they don't think should be a member of the commission.
I guess if the legislators have a conflict of interest on the one end, on the one hand, they would carry that forward in their other role too. But
well, I think maybe I think it's up to the leadership in the House and Senate to decide how to exercise their strikes. And if the concern is that the self-affiliating Republican group doesn't reflect who they wish, what they would see truthful or, real Republicans, then that's the remedy for that.
Okay.
Your time is up as well, so we now have Mr. Bursch with his five-minute rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. I want to start with Judge Radler's second portion of the question I wasn't able to answer about the Clements case and about the term limits case. The Clements case is mostly an equal protection analysis, Your Honor, but if you look at Section 5 of the opinion, the First Amendment analysis swings because the provisions did not restrict the plaintiff's ability to participate in political campaigns or to hold an office in a political party. And the court then says two paragraphs later that if the challenge provision significantly impaired interest protected by the First Amendment, the answer would be different. And so I think that's easily distinguishable. Again, on the Miller term limits case, that involved the voters' rights to vote for the party of their choice, which is a different situation, because those rights were not First Amendment rights. And again, the Miller case has never been applied in a context like this. Next, I want to address Mr. Smith's points about the patronage cases. He says because the commission was designed to be politically neutral, it slips into that line of cases that says using political litmus is inappropriate and forbidden. But that's not what this case is about at all, because the commission is designed to be politically neutral, but politically calibrated in a certain way by saying that some people are too political or some people are not political enough. And those lines then, as we've discussed, Judge Radler, you pointed out how curious they are, that a union official or a pro-choice organization's employee could be in, but the person whose daughter is a secretary for a registered lobbyist is out. And Mr. Smith's answer to that is, well, we're only trying to exclude professional politicians and lobbyists. But then why leave out the father of the secretary? And then why leave in people like city mayors or city council members who, by and large, have strong partisan affiliations? They are professional politicians, and yet under Michigan's rules, they run as nonpartisan candidates. It just doesn't make any sense. And the same problem then arises with the Branty case that he cites on page 23 of their brief. It's another patronage case. But again, we're not talking about someone being excluded because of their party affiliation. The constitutional amendments say that we want to have party affiliation, but we're going to call into question how much is too much, and then we're going to draw these crazy lines to say who we think is enough and who we don't think is enough, which, as the Michigan Republican Party points out in his brief, curiously tend to eliminate more of the conservatively motivated public officials and less of the progressively motivated individuals.
This is Judge Moore. Would somebody from the Chamber of Commerce be able to be on this, just like somebody from the union would be able to be on it?
I think someone from who is just as a member of the Chamber of Commerce would be fine, yes.
Okay, thank you.
So the comparison I was making and that the GOP drew is that in Michigan, city officials run as nonpartisans, whereas township and county officials run as partisans. Yet county and township officials are predominantly Republican in Michigan, and city officials are predominantly Democrat. And given where the money and the sponsors of this proposal came from, it's strongly suggestive that those lines were intentional to benefit one political party over the other. And so again, we're not talking about a commission designed to be politically neutral. We're talking about one that's trying to say how much is too much politically, and the scales seem to be tipped in favor of one political party over the other. Now, Ms. Meingas says that the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, says that states have to address this issue of drawing district lines, and we completely agree with that. And there may be a plan out there that someone proposes that would be constitutional. The problem is that in creating such a plan, number one, you can't burden constitutional rights of expression, petition, and association. And number two, you can't draw lines in such a way that they're over-inclusive and under-inclusive to the benefit of one party or the other. Judge Gilman, you hit the nail right on the head when you said the categories are over and under-inclusive. And Ms. Mindgast's only response to that is, well, under our test, Anderson Burdick or the Miller Deferential, then it doesn't matter. But as we've discussed at length, those tests are completely inapplicable to this situation and have never been applied to a situation like this.
No case has been applied to this situation. Isn't that the thing we're wrestling with? We've got a case of first impression, and you can't tell us what category should apply any more than we can right now.
I freely admit that, Judge Gilman, that this is a unique case, and you're going to be the first court in the country to say what the standard is. But between cases, U.S. Supreme Court cases and others that involve direct implications or burdens on First Amendment rights, which apply strict scrutiny, those where you have blanket bans on protected activity like party participation or being a candidate, or even those where you've got narrow-tailoring, like in Rutan, you know, every single one of those cases is analogous to this case. Whereas Anderson Burdick is out because this doesn't involve voting rights, it doesn't involve disparate treatment of voters, and Miller is out because it doesn't involve voting rights. If you're looking at the categories of cases that provide potential tests out there, the ones that apply strict scrutiny and narrow tailoring are all the most analogous.
And I fear, excuse me, Mr. Judge Moore, but it is now again beyond your time limit, and I know that this has been an important case for all of the lawyers and all of the parties in the case, and we thank you for your argument. And Mr. Coletta, are you going to recess court for us then?
This honorable court is now adjourned.